Throughout the Old Testament, there's a familiar refrain. Remember. Remember that you were slaves in Egypt, and the Lord your God redeemed you from there. This is Dr. Jim Tomkiewicz, Director of Distance Learning at Wyoming Catholic College, and you're listening to the After Dinner Scholar. The Exodus, God's saving work among the Israelites, whereby he brought them from slavery through the Red Sea, across the wilderness, and into the promised land of Canaan, is the primary and paradigmatic act of salvation in the Old Testament. And the New Testament writers all look back to the Exodus in order to explain the salvation Christ won for us on the cross. Just as the people of Israel, crossing the Red Sea, passed from slavery to freedom, so Christians, by baptism and faith, have crossed over from death to life. At the Wyoming School of Catholic Thought, Bible scholar and Wyoming Catholic College professor Dr. Jeremy Holmes lectured on the Exodus as critical to understanding how we return from exile. Welcome, Dr. Holmes. In your lecture, you said that the story of the Exodus is the center of gravity for the Old Testament. How is that the case?
The Exodus event is what created Israel as a nation. So every time they reflect on, as a nation, on anything happening to them from that point forward, when they try to relate what's happening to them to their identity, necessarily they're relating what's happening to the Exodus. It's like July 4th and Independence Day for us. It's the birthday of their nation, only for us, it was a bunch of people in a hall, and for them, it was the sea splitting and drowning the Egyptians and some more impressive things than what was associated with our founding. But the idea that we so strongly identify with Independence Day as the way we understand who we are, and when Israel was eventually kicked out of their land and went into exile, the Exodus provided the framework, how they came into being, provided the framework for their trying to think about how they had lost their being as a nation. So this that really is the thread that runs through the entire Old Testament narrative.
Now, it's a story of exile, but one of the things you brought up is exile from what?
Right. The people stay in Egypt for a good 400 some odd years, and they've gotten used to it. And when they come out of Egypt, are more or less dragged out of Egypt by God's action, every time something goes wrong, they say, "Oh, would that we had never left Egypt. Oh, for the flesh pots of Egypt." That it turned out just to be easier to get the Israelites out of Egypt than to get Egypt out of the Israelites, as they say.
You said that the story of Moses, personal story of Moses, is the story of the Exodus.
It's a neat thing. Moses goes through the story himself once and then kind of repeats it with the people. So in his early days, he is that young man who has grown up not just in Egypt, but in the Egyptian court and become accustomed to his ways. When he reaches adulthood, he has a struggle because his birth mother, of course, is a Hebrew, but his nurturing mother was Egyptian. So who is he, really? One day he, as the story goes, sees an Egyptian beating a Hebrew, and he kills the Egyptian. Sounds like he's siding with the Hebrews there. But the Hebrews themselves reject him. Who made you a leader over us? And Pharaoh wants to kill him, so he runs away, ends up in Midian, out in the wilderness, and the people there identify him as an Egyptian. He looks like an Egyptian, talks like an Egyptian, and when he names his firstborn son Gershom, he bases the name on the Hebrew word for sojourner, saying, "I'm a sojourner in a strange land." He seems to mean, "I'm an Egyptian far away from home." So just like the people of Israel, Moses at first is not so excited about being a Hebrew. He's kind of half Egyptian now, and it takes the encounter with God at the burning bush at Sinai to turn his life upside down, really confirm him as being a descendant of Abraham, a member of that covenant, and send him back to take the people through the same difficult journey that he's just been on.
Well, and you said in that part of that was the that odd passage about on the way back to Egypt, God suddenly wants to kill him.
Yes, that is one of the darkest stories in the Old Testament. Moses has just been commissioned by God to go save his people. And in obedience to God, he's going back to Egypt and at a lodging place along the way with no explanation given to us in the text. There's no setup for this. Suddenly, God is there trying to kill him. And the weirdest thing happens. Moses' wife, Zipporah, quickly grabs a flint knife, circumcises their son, touches the bloody foreskin to Moses' legs and says, "You are a bridegroom of blood to me." And God stops trying to kill Moses. It's so confusing. When I've looked at commentaries about this, as weird as the story is, the commentators get weirder than the text. People seem at sea. So I'm a little hesitant about, you know, laying out an interpretation, but the line that makes sense to me is to remember this son that is circumcised in this scene. This is Gershom. This is the boy that Moses named as a way of setting up a memorial of the fact that he is an Egyptian in exile from Egypt. Zipporah, by circumcising the boy, that is to say, by imposing on his flesh the sign of the covenant, rededicates him. Now Gershom's name, Sojourner, it no longer means I'm an Egyptian in exile from Egypt. It means I'm a member of the descendants of Abraham and I am far from the promised land. So now Moses, rid of his personal memorial of his Egyptian identity, is ready to go finally be the Hebrew savior.
And Moses develops over the course of this time great reluctance at the burning bush to have anything to do with God, to great intimacy with God. The people don't quite get there.
Right. And that's one of the remarkable things about the stories of the patriarchs. Moses is in this regard like Abraham, like Jacob. All of them are men who are seized by God and go through great transformation under God's tutelage, you might say. So it becomes clear that the religion of Israel is not a religion of the great founder, the Buddha, who had the great insight. He was just such a wonderful spiritual personality. It is a religion of unlikely men who were seized by God and transformed. And Moses is definitely one of those who is transformed at the burning bush. Just to look at the most startling transformation at the burning bush, he hides his face because he's afraid to see God. By the end of the story up on the mountain, on Mount Sinai, he is going to be begging God, "Show me your glory." He's transformed. The people, not so much, as you were saying. They start off sort of whiny and reluctant. By the end of the story, well, they're sort of whiny and reluctant. I mean, it seems like Moses went on this incredible journey of personal transformation. The people, they went out into the desert. It was more of a geographical than a spiritual journey for them. That also, I think, is a remarkable thing about the Old Testament. That is, we have to remember, I mean, while we want to say this happened, this is, so to speak, the national myth of Israel. This is their story about who they are. What nation is so brutally honest about itself? What nation says, yeah, we were basically whiners and complainers, and we've been that way? The incredible, just painful, honest portrait of Israel stands out. Contrast that, say, with Virgil's Aeneid, where you have a heroic portrait of the founding of Rome. Not so heroic, the fathers of Israel.
The Exodus story, of course, carries over from the Old Testament into the New Testament. Could you talk a little bit about that?
It's a remarkable thing. As I was doing a little research for the talk I gave at the Wyoming School of Catholic Thought, I was amazed to see that the name of Adam occurs 7 times in the New Testament, but the name Moses occurs 77 times in the New Testament. There are a few key passages. We could think of Romans 5, Revelation 22. There are a few key passages where the Garden of Eden or Adam and Eve are invoked to explain something. But the imagery of the Exodus and of Moses is just everywhere. John calls Jesus the Lamb of God, right? After the Paschal Lamb. Matthew is one of my personal favorites for his use of the exile imagery because of the extended way he does this. The Exodus imagery. When Matthew's gospel opens, we have Jesus, like Moses, is born under a condemnation. All the male Hebrew children are to die. Jesus, like Moses, finds safety, oddly enough, within the bosom of Egypt. Jesus, like Moses, comes out of Egypt. The very next scene, which of course in Matthew's gospel is transitioning to Jesus' adulthood, has Jesus in the Jordan going through the water as Moses, you know, was saved from the Nile, and as the people of Israel went through the Red Sea. And then Jesus goes out into the wilderness for 40 days and 40 nights, a number that only occurs a couple of times in the Old Testament, one in connection with Moses. And then he goes up on the mountain and gives the Sermon on the Mount. He gives a law. By the time you get there to watch Jesus deliver that Sermon on the Mount, he has been established in the eyes of the reader as the new Moses, ready to give the new law. It's an extended use of this imagery, but that's just one of my favorites. It's throughout. It's from the opening pages of Matthew to the last pages of Revelation. We're seeing images taken from the Exodus. It's perhaps the dominant way that the New Testament explains to us what Jesus did. It's, to be honest, the dominant imagery even in our, say, Easter Vigil liturgy.
Well, how should that story shape our Christian imaginations?
Well, first and foremost, I think that we need to read and reread the story. But following Moses' life as, a path into the story is very helpful, because when we watch that transformation Moses goes through, it's a transformation from being either all the way or halfway pagan to great intimacy with God. And we can ponder, how did he do that? And what was it that God wanted him to become? By the end, Moses is not just a political leader, he's an intercessor before God who literally offers his own life for the people. He is one who yearns to see God. He is one who has encountered God in this mysterious fire of Sinai that burns but does not consume. I think all of that is rich with material that we could meditate to figure out, what is the Christian life? You know, St. Gregory of Nyssa wrote a mystical work titled The Life of Moses, all about the spiritual life of the Christian. I think that even just reading the story in a literal way, we can get a lot of material for thinking about what transformation is Christ calling us to? What is it that we are supposed to become?
Thank you very much. If this podcast has whet your appetite for more, you're in luck. Dr. Holmes' entire lecture is available either at the Wyoming Catholic College website, at Podbean, or on iTunes. And if you've been enjoying these podcasts, please visit our iTunes page and write a short review. It will help us to expand the reach of these interviews on the great books and the liberal arts. For Wyoming Catholic College, this is Dr. Jim Tonkowicz.